I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi there. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. Thanks a lot for joining us for today's podcast, Coronavirus Facts Only. Over the next 20 minutes or so, we'll talk with two doctors about coronavirus and COVID-19. We'll get to our regular guest, Dr. Fred Buchholz, in a bit. But first, lots of us are getting back out and about these days. So what should we keep in mind if we want to minimize our risk of picking up the coronavirus? Let's talk with Dr. Hillary Babcock. Dr. Babcock is an infectious diseases specialist with BJC Healthcare and Washington University School of Medicine. Dr. Babcock, thanks for joining us.
Sure. Happy to be here.
Let's start by talking about the protests that we're seeing going on. What's your advice to protesters when it comes to protecting against coronavirus?
Sure. So I think ideally people who are protesting will be able to follow some of the same recommendations that we're making for everyone who's out in public, that they should be wearing a mask, that they should try as much as possible to keep 6 feet of distance around them, to protest together in a small group with people that they know and not necessarily sort of intermingling with larger groups as much as possible, that they clean their hands, bring hand sanitizer and wash their hands a lot. And that they wear masks and that they not go out to the protests if they are themselves ill.
What are some of the earliest symptoms people may see of coronavirus?
There are a lot of not very noticeable symptoms that have been reported. So some people have reported some mild sore throat. Some people have more significant cough and fever. Some people have suddenly lost their sense of smell or their sense of taste. So it's kind of a wide range of symptoms that people may have.
What do we need to know about large gatherings and some of those favorite summer activities? What can we do and what should we be able to do safely?
So I think it's kind of a matter of personal choice and personal responsibility at this time. Everyone has to sort of do their own risk assessment for themselves and for their families of what kind of risk they're comfortable with. The more people that you come in contact with, the more opportunities there are to be exposed to the virus. So as we reopen businesses and workplaces, then continuing to follow those safety precautions we've been talking about all along becomes more important. So wearing a mask all the time, keeping that 6 feet of distance, even if you do have a mask on, cleaning your hands a lot, and using hand sanitizer, and really not going out and about if you're not feeling well.
What advice do you have if we plan to go to a public pool?
So pools, there's not a lot of risk associated with the water. The water is probably pretty safe. The main risk I see at pools is just the difficulty in keeping that 6 foot distance. It's pretty hard to keep a mask on when you're in the pool. So that 6 foot distancing becomes more important. And that's pretty difficult for kids and even for adults in pools.
What about places like the zoo or the aquarium?
So outdoor locations are good, and there's a lot of chance for air spread and air circulation, and so I think those are low-risk environments. Any place that people can congregate at the zoo or at the aquarium, you know, again, keeping masks on, keeping that 6 foot of distance, following any rules that the business has put in place. So I know the zoo has timed entry and trying to minimize the numbers of people that are there at the same time, and the aquarium may have similar guidance. So following whatever guidance they're given and keeping that hand sanitizer with you, and don't go if you are yourself sick, because then you can put other people at risk as well.
Dr. Babcock, mid-June is the time that's been designated as when local high school and grade school sports activities can start up again. What advice do you have for parents and students when it comes to taking part in those sort of things?
So hopefully the leagues are really looking at how they can keep kids distanced as often and as much as possible, encourage mask use if that is possible, or while they're not playing, if they're sitting on the bench or waiting for their turn at bat, if it's baseball. You know, my husband and son would both really love to be playing basketball. There's really no safe way to socially distance basketball. So I think that one we're still waiting on things getting a little better before that can restart.
We're talking with Dr. Hillary Babcock. Dr. Babcock is the BJC Director of Infection Prevention and a Washington University Infectious Diseases Specialist. Dr. Babcock, what do you think about school starting up in the fall?
Boy, I really hope that kids can go back to school in the fall. I think that most schools are preparing for all the different possibilities. They've all had a trial run at doing fully virtual school and virtual classes and schoolwork. I think they, you know, they obviously know how to do school with kids in the classroom. And I think most of them are looking at hybrid models and ways that they can minimize risk to hopefully allow kids to come back to school, maybe with altered schedules and different practices to try and keep kids distanced, encourage hand sanitizer use all the time, mask use as well, and really maximize the chances that kids might be able to spend at least some time at school.
Some experts are saying that 6 feet of separation may not be enough to stop transmission of the virus. What do you think?
I think that 6 feet is generally sufficient, but farther, I certainly have no objection to people staying farther apart.
Dr. Babcock, anything else you want to add?
Just want to remind everyone to, as you get to move around more in public, to really keep focusing on those main safety practices, wearing a mask, keeping your distance, doing hand sanitizer, and staying home if you are not well.
Dr. Babcock, thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you.
Dr. Hillary Babcock is an infectious diseases specialist with BJC Healthcare and Washington University School of Medicine. Now let's turn to Dr. Fred Buchhold. Dr. Buchhold is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Dr. Buchhold, thanks for joining us again.
My pleasure.
Let's start today's conversation with the listener question first. This listener wants to know, what are some safe summer activities to do in your medical opinion, Dr. Buchhold?
Well, I think the real answer is still, I think, unsure. The most conservative answer to that would be, you know, if not kind of minimal contact with others, at least, you know, guarded contact with others in the sense of, you know, keeping kind of a close-knit group of colleagues, friends, family members, where everybody kind of intermingles with each other, but not without minimally within a larger community. I don't know if that's really where I'd go with that personally. You know, I think big mass gatherings still are the ones I'm more worried about. So, you know, as much as I love baseball, as much as I love going to the zoo and doing other things where there's a lot of people in kind of a confined area and the most popular times, those are probably things I'd at least to start with would avoid. You know, I pull my kids out of camps for that same reason. You know, but I think going to a park, having decent distance from others, wearing your mask is a good kind of way to kind of dip your toe into kind of getting out. But I think places that have a lot of people or other things are like, I think indoor where the ventilation is really unclear or the practices aren't in place to really ensure safe distance and safety are the big ones. And I'm, you know, personally, I still haven't decided what to do, like with a swimming pool, a public swimming pool. I'm nervous about those things. I'm not saying that nervousness is right or wrong, but I think it's just dipping your toes in, seeing how things go. And you know, certainly, you know, I think what's important to talk about here is that our thinking about this evolved. We're now kind of liberalizing what we do. People are out. The city and county have loosened the rules as of mid-May. It seems to be so far so good with this, and that's reassuring. You know, we certainly have a bigger depth of knowledge of how things occur with COVID than we did 3 months ago, where we had no idea, and we had no idea how many people had it or who had it or whether or not we had reliable tests or equipment. So, you know, the draconian measures we took 3 months ago, I don't think we need to go back to, but I don't think we need to go back to full kind of business as usual either in terms of our own activities.
Dr. Buchhold, health officials in Missouri say they've seen no new COVID-19 cases from all those Lake of the Ozarks pool parties over the Memorial Day weekend. What do you think is happening there?
Well, two things. One is, you know, it seems more evident that the vast majority of COVID infections occur in these what we call super spreader events. So a couple examples of this just that are in the news, that have been in the news, is, you know, the church service in Korea, where a couple people that are infected pretty much the whole church, 1,000 people. The Champions League game in Milan that kind of led to the kind of bomb there. A couple other events kind of throughout the United States where there's a convention or a meeting where a number of people got sick. And that seems to be the kind of the vast surge in transmissions. And so, you know, the common traits of that, for the most part, have been, you know, confined areas where people are close together, to some degree indoor, but not all the way, because, you know, the soccer match in Milan was outdoors. But not every event like that caused spread. And so, you know, I think the thing with the Lake of the Ozarks is, you know, so far so good. I'm not ready to say that, you know, that nothing's going to happen from there. I think if in a couple of weeks nothing happens, I think we can say that we dodged a bullet. That being said, I think it's still one of those things that just you're asking for trouble in that type of circumstance. So just because you got lucky doesn't mean it's safe. And I think that's important to make that distinction. And those people better think they're lucky stars, or, you know, maybe go to a casino or do the lottery, because they got really lucky. That could have been very, very dangerous. And so far, so good. Let's see how it plays out. But you know, I think just saying it didn't happen shouldn't make us all feel safer from that standpoint.
We're talking with Dr. Fred Buchholz. Dr. Buchholz is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Let's talk a little bit more about super spreaders. Hong Kong University's Benjamin Cowling did a study that showed 20% of cases accounted for an astonishing 80% of transmissions.
We know on average for COVID-19 that one person might spread to two or three others if we weren't taking any actions to try and stop transmission. A super spreading event is when a person infects way more than maybe they would do on average. So maybe one person infects 6, 8, 10 more people, or even more than that. Of people that are infected, they quite often probably been infected in a super spreading event, because these things do happen and cause a lot of transmission. In order to have transmission, you need a person who's relatively more contagious, and also the opportunity for them to pass on infection to lots of other people. It is to some extent unusual, but it's actually happening enough to keep an epidemic going and to sustain an epidemic.
I guess the million-dollar question is, how do you tell who's a super spreader before it's being spread?
Yeah, that is a million-dollar question. And just because of my own inner nerdiness, I just have to say that this is proof again of something called the Pareto principle, which is generally the most natural phenomenon. 80% of the evidence you see is caused by 20% of the people at risk. So like the fact that they said 20% or 80% of the infections are from 20% of the people is kind of goes along a fairly natural phenomenon. So that just is kind of interesting to see. But you're right. I mean, going back to the Ozarks example, like that had the potential to be there, but it didn't happen for reasons we probably don't understand and probably will never understand. I mean, that's kind of the magic of nature and how insanely complicated the world, let alone medicine, is. But you don't know where that is. And that's kind of going back to the broader concept of, and kind of nebulous concept of herd immunity, is you don't know where that infection starts, and it happens at random. And things that you think are an emergency and you scramble and try to kind of intervene end up not being an emergency for reasons we don't know. And that kind of happened with Ebola 2014, 2013, whenever that was pretty prominent. You know, there was a significant concern, and, you know, we started having cases in the United States, but never really spread. And, you know, you can argue and say, well, that was because of the big public health measures that were undertaken at the time, or it may have just been random chance, and it's hard to tell. You know, still kind of going back to the point with the Ozarks, is you just don't know. And I think at this point, you know, having these mass events, or, you know, events where a lot of people are in a confined space, is just flirting with danger. I don't think we're ready to do that yet. Once we get some degree of herd immunity, that's when, you know, or a vaccine, and you have a certain percentage of the population is vaccinated, that's where it really you can say there's some safety in going out in those numbers. But not saying you have to wait for that. But that would be kind of the easiest decision to make if that was the case.
Dr. Buchholz, let's talk a little bit about all the protests we've seen across the nation and in the St. Louis area over this past week. Here's CBS News correspondent Carter Evans.
At packed protests around the country, thousands shoulder to shoulder, many without masks. Exactly what we've been told not to do in this time of COVID.
I am seriously worried about what's going to happen, you know, 10 days from now when we start to see those cases rise dramatically.
That concern now highlighted in a new study in The Lancet, which found that without a mask, the risk of transmitting COVID is more than 17%. With a mask, it drops to 3%.
We gotta stop this!
And while the hugs between police and protesters and loud cries of support might be heartwarming,
this is our city!
People out there screaming at the top of their lungs, this can't be a good thing.
The more droplets that go into the air, the more the potential for spread.
Even more serious, research shows the virus itself may discriminate.
You know, the paradox here is that we're protesting because of unequal treatment. At the same time, this virus is saying, I don't care that you're African-American. I'm going to disproportionately affect you.
Dr. Buchholz, a whole lot to talk about there. Where do you want to start?
I'm not sure. I think first, let me say, I would wholeheartedly endorse everybody getting tested that were involved, police and the protesters. And if we have that testing capability, all the better. I'm not sure if it's there yet, at least in this region. I think it's important, we kind of treat these as two separate events, you know, the people, the significant portion of our population protesting about, you know, systemic injustice and police discrimination and violence and COVID. And I think it's important to realize these are totally related events. Think about St. Louis. Let's just take everything else. Let's have a couple clear things. St. Louis remains, unfortunately, a fairly segregated city. You know, there's clearly a north and south divide. And let's talk about COVID, because COVID clearly has disproportionately affected the Black community in St. Louis. If you think about healthcare access, think about all the hospitals and the hospital systems in St. Louis. I work at St. Louis University, which is right in the heart of Midtown or the central quarter of St. Louis. My colleagues at Barnes is in the central west end, so the central part of St. Louis. You drive out Interstate 64 or Highway 40, whatever you want to call it, and you go out about 10 miles, there's another couple of hospitals, and you keep on driving that. And most of the hospitals in the region kind of follow US 40 or Interstate 64. There's some in South County, and we have two in North County, Christian and DePaul. And, you know, in terms of clinics and medical access, it's much easier to get care and access and to see a physician or a nurse practitioner in a clinic in that central quarter or the southwest quarter that it is in the northern quarter of St. Louis. And it's no surprise that DePaul and Christian Northwest were the two hardest hit hospitals of COVID. And then Barnes and St. Louis University were probably behind that, as well as St. Mary's. So, you know, these go hand in hand. The systemic issues that are in this region were reflected in COVID, as with every other health outcome. And so these go hand in hand, and I think the medical community is coalescing around the idea that, yes, you know, these mass gatherings, you know, certainly increase the risk of COVID, and you know, the pictures I've seen, and again, I don't think there's really any data one way or the other to know what's going on. You know, a large number are wearing face masks, which is nice to see, but I don't know if that's just a sampling bias. But this is a massive public health issue, and I think, as the reporter said, COVID affects everybody. It doesn't go across class or race or socioeconomic status. And public health for one group of individuals affects the public health of all of us. And so, you know, in my mind, I think it's important, being an advocate for healthcare for everybody, that we recognize that this disparity is a problem for all of us and isn't right. And I've dealt with this my entire career. I think the most interesting thing talking about this with you, Fred, and with others is, you know, the surprising fact that COVID affected certain communities more disproportionately than others. In my work and my experience, this is no surprise. In fact, I could have easily predicted this if you asked me. I think that's a gross injustice and a stain on our society. And let me be clear, I'm culpable in that. I've not done enough to advocate for that or do something to change that. And, you know, I think it's a reflection of our healthcare system, which I am a part of. So I recognize my own role in this. So try not to be a hypocrite in that stance.
So your advice then to anyone that wants to go out and protest is what?
Yeah, wear a face mask. Bring hand sanitizer with you so you can wash your hands frequently. I appreciate the symbols of contact, but I think that needs to be limited. If you're going to bring equipment, you know, or food with you, just make sure that, you know, you try not to share it, try to keep it in separate bags. Those would be the main things. And then try to keep your distance as much as you can. You know, some have been really efficient in trying to kind of keep separation of, you know, at least 3 feet from other people. The issue with mass crowds is always the mob can take over and that can be a problem. You know, there's no control over that, but you know, just so everybody, I want everybody to be safe, and hopefully most of this will be peaceful on both ends, and that's what I truly hope for.
Let's talk for a moment about the coronavirus vaccine. Coronavirus vaccine developers expect when one is found, it will probably be a two-dose regimen. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, and again, there's lots of vaccines that are like that. I mean, if you have a child, they get a series of three vaccines for polio and measles, mumps, and rubella. If you've had a hepatitis vaccine, hepatitis B or hepatitis A, that's the same thing. Meningitis, I believe, as well. The point of this is when you get that first shot, it generates an immune response. So for the most part, so hepatitis A is a perfect example. If you were going to a country that has, is endemic for hepatitis A in 2 weeks and you saw them in a clinic, I'll give you the hepatitis A shot. I'd say, you know, this will probably protect you for the trip. But if you were to go another 6 months, it would not protect you. It just kind of gives you kind of a short-term immunity. And then the second shot kind of, you know, kind of re-energizes the immune system and has a second boost, which is why we call them boosters, to kind of confer more of a long-term immunity. It may not be lifelong, but it gives you immunity for a little bit longer time than just, you know, say a couple months or 6 months or something like that. Not surprising at all. And again, very common strategy for vaccines.
Dr. Buckle, thanks a lot for all your time. Really do appreciate it again.
Yeah, appreciate it as well, Fred. Thanks for letting me have a voice, and hopefully this has been helpful. So thank you.
Dr. Fred Buckle is a slew care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. And that's all the time we have for today's podcast, Coronavirus Facts Only. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. Thanks a lot for listening.